Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Casterbrus podcast. Yes, with a K. Available on casterbrus.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and audio boo. It all started as a mild curiosity by these Casterbrites, and now it's turned into quite a spirit of adventure, don't you think? Listen.
And this is normally where I play the theme tune. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, as the Doctor has already said. It's the podcast with a K. I'm Christian Corley. This is Brian Terranova.
That's this one here.
That's that one over there.
That's me.
He's way over there.
Way over here.
Unless you're in the US, in which case I'm way over there.
Yes.
He's way right here with you.
People could be standing next to us and we're still way over there.
Yes. It's just the two of us this week, I believe.
I think so. There's not another voice going on in here.
No, which is strange, yet strangely relaxing. Just knowing it's the two of us. And, you know, it means... I'm not entirely sure what James is doing. Apparently he isn't doing the...
Podcast hall!
...thing. So he could be doing some study things. Yeah, he's a student now, is James. He's a mature student. I don't know if you knew that. You knew that, didn't you?
I knew that.
Yeah, but I don't know about
whether
the
or not the rest of them knew that.
Yeah, you know. So yeah, he's doing a film master's. So that's good, and we hope he does really well with that.
Tell me, does he have to dress like Turlough?
I honestly don't know. I don't know how they. I mean, he lives in Norfolk as well, and the British people listening will know, as I do, that they do things a strange kind of way in Norfolk. So, I honestly couldn't say. Although I should say as well, I am actually going on holiday to Norfolk this year, so
really?
I don't know if James and I will have the opportunity to meet face to face. That may be interesting.
I think that would be fun.
Yeah. Do you remember when we first met?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah? What happened? I can't remember.
Well, okay, wait. You know what? I tell this story quite often because you actually made me feel very good.
Did
I? Because I felt, yes, because I felt like the typical American jerk, all right? And I'll tell you why. When I first got over there, tell this to the listeners as well, that, rather than just you, but when I first got over there, my first stop was in Manchester, where Anthony Dry, who co-founded the site with Christian and who used to do all the art and co-run the site with us, picked me up. And from there, he took me back to Liverpool. We stayed there for the night before heading out to Christian in Redcar. And I know British accents. I'm so used to them. I watch so much British TV. I've gotten used to the Scottish accents, the Welsh accents, the Liverpoolian accents, as many, many different ones as you can think. But for the life of me, I had great difficulty understanding a lot of the things Anthony was saying to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt awful. I don't know if he listens to these things, but he may know the secret now. But I kept sitting in the car. He would say something to me and I'd have to sit there instead of going, I'm sorry, I didn't understand you. I would go, oh, I'm sorry. I was drifting there for a second. I missed that. What did you say? And I'm like, because I felt awful. I'm like, I should be able to understand this guy. I don't normally have this issue when watching movies. What's the problem? And it wasn't everything, but it was a fair amount. And so when we got to you and we both walked in your house, we both said hello, and he said something to you and you said, I'm sorry, I can't understand that. What did you say? And I felt vindicated. I felt so happy. Oh, thank God I'm not the stupid American. Like, it's not just me. Christian can't understand him either. I felt so bad. But it made me feel so good to know that.
Yeah, they do. People of the Liverpool area, who are popularly known as Scousers, they do tend to, like Geordies from Newcastle, they do tend to kind of disappear into their own little their own colloquial terms and things when they're in the wider world expecting everyone to know what it is that they're talking about. I can't say I blame them because they're both they do both they're cities with very rich cultures, so it's not really much of a surprise. But I do have a recollection of it's happened since as well when I've spoken to Anthony, not
really
being entirely certain what he said. But it was a good time actually, and we went to a convention, didn't we, in Stockton on Tees to the Dimensions convention.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's a couple of photos floating around on the internet from there of the two of us. I don't know if and we met Gareth there as well the first time, didn't we?
Was that the first? Yeah, we did. It was the first time. Yes, it was. Yeah,
it was. Yeah. So I'd forgotten about that actually.
That was a nice little con. I liked that actually. Quiet, definitely a different experience to going to a convention here. But I liked it. It was a good time. I was glad we did that. It was quite a unique experience coming over that first time to hang out with you guys. We got to do a lot of cool stuff. As a matter of fact, every trip I've ever come over to visit with you guys, we've gotten to do a lot of really cool stuff. So I really appreciate that. But it was nice to come over there. And, you know, I know, obviously, for those of you who don't know, I know Christian and Anthony and, you know, James, Gareth, everybody through the whole Doctor Who connection. And actually, I know Christian and Anthony through Casterbris. And from there, everybody has an extension through Casterbris. So everything was through a Doctor Who connection. So going over to England, that was my second trip to England. So going over there then to meet them, and just by chance, the weekend that I chose, it was actually my birthday that weekend, or rather I was there for a week. So that time that I chose was over my birthday week. Just by chance, there was a Doctor Who convention that was relatively close. I don't remember how close it was to you, but it just worked out. So it was cool to know that we met through a Doctor Who connection, and we were able to, when we got over there, go celebrate it in some way. So
it's about 15 miles.
That was a lot of fun. That's not bad.
No, it's not bad, is it? No.
So
and what I was going to say as well, oh, just before I do carry on, if you just think about what Brian's just said, dear listener, and then consider how we actually got in touch with this. Basically, when Casterbris launched in 2005, it was, which is a key date, which we'll be mentioning again later in this podcast, he sort of got in touch with us. I don't think he got in touch with me. I think he got in touch with Anthony. And then, you know, within months, he was staying in our houses. I mean, that's a bit ultra-stalker, that, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it worked for me. As far as stalkers go, I think I got closer than most, you know? You guys welcomed me into your homes. Could have been fear. I don't know.
Okay, Brian, I sent an email out the other day. I said, hey, guys, what are we going to talk about this week on the podcast? And you were the one who replied. Can you remember what you said? Because I can't bring it up.
I can remember, yes. I said two things. You want me to bring up the main one?
Yeah, we'll bring them both up. The first one. Bring up the first one. Maybe a surprise, even though I've already ruined it.
Oh, okay. Well, hey. Well, no. The first one, actually, you might be having them out of order. I don't know. We'll find out. My first suggestion was I want to do a podcast on the First Doctor and the fact that the First Doctor is more than just flubbed lines, because I think he gets a very bad rap out there from a lot of fans, certainly a lot of fans who don't watch the classic series, who just kind of repeat the information they get and don't give him a chance. And some fans who watched once in a while and, you know, or watch them all the episodes once and just take that away from it.
We're not doing that this week.
No, he's got a lot of good stuff. So we're going to do that. Okay?
We are going to do that at some point, though.
Yes. The second suggestion, which is what we're doing this week, is we're approaching the 10-year anniversary of the new series. And I kind of felt, obviously, we should be making mention of that.
Well, it's what's the date today? It's the 16th, isn't it? So, you know, we're looking basically a week on Thursday is the anniversary. It's the 26th of March, week on Thursday, in 10 days' time.
Right.
You know, there's a total eclipse on Friday for the UK.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, I say total eclipse. It's going to be a kind. It's not going to be a total eclipse. It's going to be a kind of, you know, a 16/17th eclipse or something like that. There's going to be a bit of the sun visible, but only a sliver. So that'll be interesting. We don't get them very often over here.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Mm. So just a date for your diary there. Any stargazers listening? Anyone who wants to know suddenly why it seems as though the Armageddon has started on Friday, you know. Now, you know. And it's also happening in the morning as well, which I think the last time it happened about 10 or 11 a.m., but this time it's happening between 8:30 and 9:30, which is going to be particularly interesting for those of you who are travelling to work at that time. So series one anniversary is a week on Thursday. So I thought we'd split this into two parts, Brian.
Yeah, I'm fine.
So we'll do half the series this week, and then the other half of the series next week. Now, where do you want to do the dividing line? Do you want to finish with the Christmas invasion? Or
yes, I think we should, because while it was later on in the year and wasn't really technically part of series one, it was still within the first year. It was still 2005. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's a good place.
Okay. So I wonder if our listener is one of those people who tuned in when Doctor Who returned on the 26th of March 2005, or whether they were the type of person who heard about it afterwards.
Are you waiting for an answer from them? Because I don't think they're going to answer you right now.
No, you might be right there, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Although they could put it in the comment section for us.
They could do that. Yeah, okay. So yeah, do let us know how you discovered Doctor Who in 2005. If you discovered Doctor Who after 2005, then don't. I was not interested. I don't care, frankly, on this occasion anyway. But yeah, I'd be interested to know. Because also, another thing that happened, Brian, was that Doctor Who went up against the ITV Titans Ant and Dec when it returned.
I remember this.
And there was a lot of press build up for Doctor Who, and there's comments in newspapers saying, "Oh, it's going to be rubbish." Although, you know, one look at the people involved in it would show you, you know, like Russell T. Davies, Christopher Eccleston, all the various guest casts that had been announced at that point would give you, Simon Callow as Charles Dickens. Come on, would give you the quite clear opinion that impression that it wasn't going to be rubbish. This was going to be a quality production. So it did apparently, and I know because people I worked with were surprised at how good it was, and that's just based on Rose before we carried on with the rest of the series. But Ant and Dec show, I can't recall what their show was at the time. I don't know whether it was their Saturday Night Takeaway or whatever they were doing in those days. They started off slightly bumpy because it was a live show. And that kind of thing happened. And then one of them said, they kind of got into the stride, and one said, "Doctor Who?" And then apparently, as the legend says, that was the point in which X million people switched over, forgetting that Doctor Who was on.
Oh, get out.
Yeah, seriously.
That's pretty cool. That's true. That's a very good story.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know how genuine it is, but that's what the legend says. It's quite an interesting. Don't mention the competition, basically, because they'll go, "Oh, hello, that's on, isn't it? I'll go and turn it over." So, but obviously, you in the United States had a slightly different introduction to Doctor Who Series 1, didn't you?
Yeah, well, Series 1 didn't air here until, I think it was a year later, and then they tried to rush it so that they could kind of catch up with Series 2. Even just trying to buy the box sets, we had to wait. You know, you guys generally always get that kind of stuff quicker than us. If it airs on TV there, you usually can buy it on DVD relatively quickly, you know, within a week or a month after that. I mean, certainly I remember the old TV movie was that way. So for us, since it didn't air here, our only hope was trying to get copies of it somehow to watch. And one of those things was the official DVDs, which we had to buy from Canada after it aired in Canada. And even then, it was close to a year later. So what I ended up having to do was I met this guy at a convention years ago, probably in the 90s. And at the time, not every classic story was on either VHS or DVD. So he used to tape the episodes off UK Gold and would sell VHSs of them at conventions. So I ended up buying over the years quite a few off-air copies of episodes from UK Gold. And when the new series came about, I immediately contacted him and said, "Look, what can you do to help me out here? Because unfortunately, this thing isn't going to air here." And so he put up a whole system together and made DVDs of the first few episodes as they aired and sent them over. Now, I was able to watch them relatively quickly after they aired, not as quick as we are today, but that was my introduction. And the one thing I remember is when I got that first DVD with Rose on it, you know, I had my friend over my house because he and I, we were very into the show, and we both just we sat down to watch that. We were both just like dumbfounded. It was so good, because to us, I mean, you know, say what they want to say, but to us, we were sitting there watching brand new Doctor Who after so long of wanting more of it. We were just like, okay, next episode, please. And it's weird because I kind of had the same experience as you guys did with the Graham Norton break in audio. Because since I got the British copy on DVD sent to me, I had that. Yeah. And I think we talked about this before. Previously, with Time and the Ranny and the Doctor Who TV movie, my copies of them, Time and the Ranny, was taped off of PBS. And at the time, my VHS recorder was broken, so it kept automatically stopping, and I'd have to keep starting it. So when I would watch that story back, it would have, you know, horrible, horrible edits, because even during one scene alone that didn't have any cuts of its own, I may have had three cuts in there. And I would watch this thing this way because I was stupid, essentially. And with the TV movie, both my friend and I, when we taped it off air, and we would pause for commercials. So this one commercial break, when they're in the Institute for Advanced Scientific Research, it started with a party. There were just balloons and streamers everywhere, and we thought it was a commercial, so neither one of us hit record. So with these, we started it later. We got it. We didn't really miss a tremendous amount, but we missed a bit. So again, it was like a bad edit. So when those two stories and when Rose hit DVD properly, or VHS, whichever corresponding for all those particular stories, when they finally, for instance, with the TV movie, I had to wait years. I had to wait for when the US DVD came here. But with Rose, whenever any of them came up, I kept expecting my bad edits to happen, or I expected the Graham Norton audience howling in the middle of Rose. So I was so used to it because I watched it over and over and over again with those issues, you know? So yeah, it's kind of funny. While it never aired here in the US that way, my memory is of the British transmission with the Graham Norton break-in.
It's funny how you know, bad edits kind of stick with you in your mind.
Yeah.
I may mention this before. I have a good friend called Ben Staples, who I went to school with, and he we used to listen to a lot of rock music at school. We'd buy albums and do copies and exchange copies of them. We'd do Dire Straits. Who else was there? Beatles, a bit of Led Zeppelin, Thin Lizzy. But the thing that started it off was Queen. So the one that kind of got started was Queen, and on the Kind of Magic album, you may know, dear listener, you may know, Brian, as well, that there's tracks on there that are from the Highlander movie.
Yeah.
Such as Princes of the Universe. And what Ben used to do was he'd record things, but he'd forget to turn the microphone off his hi-fi system or something. So it was a tape-to-tape system, I think. But however he would do it, you would get some sort of addition from him. And on one occasion,
okay,
on this occasion, on Prince of the Universe, the tape sounded as though he'd stopped the tape, turned it over, and then turned it back again, or took it out and put it back in and pressed record again. So, and it only lasted about a second, maybe 2 seconds, just before the final chorus. I cannot listen to that song without expecting
nice
that sound.
It is a very strange thing, isn't it? I mean, I've got a lot of them just because of how I had to tape Doctor Who off TV and even the X-Files. But yeah, it's amazing how those sorts of things, because it's your first impression of what you're hearing.
Yeah, exactly.
Or seeing. So clearly, and we get to, you know, people talk about fan minds all the time. We catalog this stuff. We archive these things like nobody else. So they are very much a part of our memories. It's such a weird thing. As a matter of fact, I still have that copy of Rose. And occasionally I just put it on just for nostalgic reasons, you know.
Right.
It's weird. Not even just to watch the whole thing. I just want to like see it, because it's a piece of history. You know, Doctor Who, the transmission of the new show, both transmissions of the classic series and the new series were interrupted in some way sounds more horrible to say interrupted for the first one, but it was kind of cast aside because something more relevant in life happened, you know. But it's interesting to see that they both had something, and in some way it's history not necessarily repeating itself, but in a way repeating itself. It was a little fun fact to know, and some things that when I meet Doctor Who fans today doing conventions, and those who maybe jumped on board with David Tennant or Matt Smith, they're unaware of those things. And when you can tell them, you know, that sort of stuff happened, you know, it's interesting to see how many people actually kind of are interested in that. They're impressed by that, or not impressed so much, but they find it fun just knowing these little tidbits of things that they didn't know. Because it is interesting to know, you know, like finding out when an episode went on strike, you know, little just interesting facts that we would otherwise never really know.
Listen, you won't know this, I don't think. And of course you will know this. We've done that bit. What I was going to say is, do you remember the whole thing with the rose being leaked on the internet?
Yes. Oh, yes.
I mean, I know we talked about this last year in relation to the Series 8 leaks. But were you in any way tempted to download that version?
I was. I was very much, and while I do actually own a copy of it now, I guess it's okay to say that now, it's so many years on. At the time, the same guy that I had contacted to get the episodes on DVD mailed over from the UK, he had told me, he's like, why do you want to do this? And I said, well, because I want to see them, and it's not airing over here. And he said, well, you know, you can just torrent them soon enough. He said, that's really moving that way. And I was like, well, what's torrenting? Because I didn't know what it was, you know. And when he told me, I was kind of a little hesitant to do that sort of thing, you know. I was a little kind of like, okay, well, are they gonna know I'm doing this? I don't know. So yeah, I was tempted, but I did my first few episodes on DVD because it was a little, I don't know, strange new world kind of thing. Yeah.
Here's an interesting story for you, and we'll move on to some other episodes in a little while. But two interesting things about Doctor Who Series 1. When it was announced in 2003, Kerry and I had just returned from a trip to Austria, which took in the Munich Beer Festival, which is one of the most amazing things. And you don't even have to drink to go there, even though there's lots of beer and other alcoholic beverages are available there. But, you know, it's a big fun fair kind of situation as well, so it's lots of fun, and on par bands and rock bands and things going on. So we'd been there, and we'd come back to the UK, and we got dropped off. It was a trip organised by our local social club, but we got dropped off in South Yorkshire to go to Kerry's auntie's. And the following day, we went into Rotherham, I think it was. It was Rotherham or Doncaster, probably Rotherham. I just happened to pop into W.H. Smith because, you know, I was out with Torch and being in the UK for 10 days. And it's there on the front of the newspaper. Doctor Who's coming back. It had been leaked to the press the night before or whatever. Or there was a leak coming, so they'd announced it formally to the press the night before. Something along those sort of lines. Anyway, now, I was absolutely gobsmacked. I couldn't believe it. I could barely contain myself for the rest of the day, or indeed weekend. And then fast forward 18 months later, we're staying at the same auntie's again, but because she has a pathological dislike of Doctor Who, probably I don't know, scared by green maggots or something when she was a child, she banned me from watching it while we were there. Imagine that. Yeah, so like, you're banning it. A 20-something-year-old adult from watching the television. It's absolutely, and do forgive me, dear listener, absolutely fucking ridiculous. One of the few things that really irritated me in my life was that piece of pettiness. So what I ended up doing is, because she said beforehand that we weren't going to be watching it, because she'd arranged something in the event she hadn't arranged anything, but because I thought that she had arranged something, I downloaded it. So I did, and as Brian says, 10 years on, we can probably get away with admitting it, I also downloaded that torrent. Or rather, you didn't download it, did you? But I did download that torrent. And I did very much. And I was, to be honest with you, I was quite shocked with the new theme tune music, because I was quite happy with the Tom Baker theme tune version that was on the Rose Leak.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, it did actually work. I mean, they how did they do that? Did they speed up the intro or slow it down? Because I know I've seen,
sure.
Like I said, but it did work. The actual,
I've still got it somewhere, but I haven't rewatched it since 2005. Yeah. I don't think.
The one thing I remember being taken about, since I guess we're talking about the leaked one, because it's fun, was the scene when the Doctor and Rose are walking down the street and he's holding on to the Altan arm. Because in the early version, in the leaked version, there's a lot of very heavy music playing over it, which made it very difficult to understand what they were saying. Mm-hmm. Whereas on the transmitted version, you can hear when they started to phase the music out of that scene, and the rest of that scene played on with very little to hardly any until they got to the police box. And I know that was, I don't want to say a chief complaint, because I don't know if that's fair to say, but I know that was something a lot of people commented on in series one, that the music was very heavy in places. Mm-hmm. And that would have definitely been an area that had gotten called out if it was transmitted that way.
Well, that's a kind of a thing that people still have to this day, not just with Doctor Who, but other TV shows that have been louder than they'd prefer. Listen, we're going to look at seven. Well, I say look at, because we probably don't have time to look at all seven.
Yes.
Up to from Rose through to the Long Game. And this is, if you really want to know what we really thought of these episodes when they were first released, dear listener, then can I recommend to you Ultimate Regeneration? A book comprising the reviews of episodes from 2005 through to the first day of 2010, basically. Rose through to the end of time. And you not only will you find reviews of those episodes, contemporary reviews as well, so historical documents in many ways, and a commentary by myself linking everything up. There's a few other things in there as well. There's also a lot of the history around the development of the show. Nothing in depth, but what we knew from a press perspective, which is, it proved to be, I was flicking through it the other day and I was quite surprised at how much we actually squeezed in and how much detail we went into in some places there. And it's also the book, being a kind of a Casterbris book, and Casterbris kind of being synonymous with myself, at least for the first 5 years, it also kind of tells the tale of the kind of someone who is watching the show and isn't entirely satisfied with the new series, and then by the end of it is completely in love with it, which I think tells a nice kind of tale, dear listener. The link for that will be in the show notes, but you can find it on Amazon, or you can email me at christian@casterbris.com, and we can arrange payment over PayPal should you wish to. That's all got rather commercial there, didn't it? I think there's a lot of valuable things in there that you can't find online without doing a lot of searches, and it's pretty much more or less all of the reports that we had on Casterbris at the time and other things besides. So, Rose, if you were, did you know how many people watch Rose in the UK?
Well, I'm sure I knew the number at one point or read the number, but I don't remember it offhand now.
10.81 million.
Wow, nice.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
How are we going to go through this? Are we just going to, did you want to say like favorite moments, or do you just want to give them a rating, those first sort of seven episodes?
You know, I mean, favorite moments is probably a nice way. We've done ratings before. Mm. And since we're kind of doing this more as a celebration, an anniversary, hitting on the favorite moments is probably a better aspect to go.
I agree. Yeah. So what's your favorite moment in Rose?
Favorite moment in Rose? Wow. I honestly think probably would have to go with the Eccleston speech to Rose about who he is. Uh-huh. Just because I remember being very wowed by that moment, even though when you sit there and you actually like listen to it, you kind of sit there and go, what? But it was a great moment. It was a very well done scene. I loved how they used the visuals there of him holding her hand and letting go to kind of describe what life is like with him, because that stuff is very apt. So, yeah, I felt that was a very powerful moment from that story. I really took to that one.
Okay. I think
yourself?
I think you'd have trouble disagreeing with that, but I think just when he grabs a hand in the basement is probably the best moment. to be honest.
Sure. Yeah, it's another good one.
Yeah. Okay. The End of the World came next with 7.97 viewers. 7.97 million viewers. That wasn't sort of like... Not 7.97 people. Because obviously someone would have had to lose a limb to be that 0.97 of a person. And this was when we first met Lady Cassandra as well, the very flat last human. Favourite moment for you, Brian?
For me there, it's probably a bit of a toss-up between the whole jiggery-pokery scene with him fixing up Rose's phone, just because I felt he was very doctorish there. And the other moment being the face-off at the end with Lady Cassandra when she was having her speech and he was like, "And creak." And she's like, "What?" And he's like, "You're creaking." Something yeah. about that moment was, it was just extremely cool. It was dark, but it was extremely cool. Mm.
I think there's a lot of strong moments in The End of the World, actually.
Yeah, it's very good.
I mean, visually, it's absolutely stunning. And there's obviously the whole thing of Rose being trapped in the viewing room with the screen cracking and all that kind of thing. But I think my favorite moment is probably Rose again when she chats to the plumber.
Oh yeah, that's another good moment.
A really good moment with lots of character and humanity in it. It's really nice. The Young Quiet Dead, which up until this point, we hadn't had any kind of... there'd been nothing that hinted at the kind of darkness that Doctor Who does in things like Curse of Fenric, Ghostlight, or, you know, the Hinchcliffe era, or anything like that. And then you've got The Unquiet Dead with its pre-credit sequence and that cadaverous old lady screaming, which is absolutely marvellous. 8.86 million people tuned in for Mark Gatiss' first Doctor Who story. Simon Callow as Charles Dickens. What's your favourite moment?
I'm going to go with the conversation between Rose and Gwen, correct? Yes, Gwyneth.
Gwyneth.
Rose and Gwyneth.
That's Gwyneth, that one. You're thinking of someone else. You're thinking of another show.
I'm thinking of that ancestor of hers.
Descendant.
Because that moment just, you know, really kind of again spelled out the show. But it was done in such a great way that it was spelled out to Rose for Rose's understanding, you know, and yeah, I thought that was a very good moment, and certainly the way that they worked in the Bad Wolf there and Gwyneth's ability. So I really liked that moment a lot. Mm.
Again, it's a really strong episode with a lot to it, and visually very rich. The moment when they land and he reveals that they're not in wherever it was, I can't remember where it was they were intending to go. Was it Rome or somewhere in Italy? But it's actually, or was it Venice? Or even Vienna? I can't remember. I honestly can't remember. but it turns out that they're in Cardiff. Rosie's reaction to that's really good. But I think probably my favourite... I've already said what my favourite moment is. It's the pre-credit sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's marvellous. We push on the following week to Aliens of London, which is a... we'll do this... Shall we do this as a two-parter in one, or do you want to...
Yeah, I think that's fair to do. Because, you know, we would have done classic stories as one.
Exactly,
so
exactly.
Let's treat it the same.
Okay,
yeah.
So Aliens of London and World War III. The first part was 7.63 million viewers, and the second part, World War III, 7.98 million. Interestingly, it was directed by Keith Bulk, who I don't believe has returned to Doctor Who. Just worth mentioning. He also directed Rose, whereas The Unquiet Dead was Eris Lynn. And Dalek was Joe Ahern, so both people who did return. So the Slitheen invade in a very clever manner, and then basically go on to fast the way through the rest of the adventure. how would you feel about the Slitheen in Aliens of London 10 years later?
Oh man, well, 10 years later, I'm okay with it, because when you get past the fact that not only do they fart, but they draw too much attention to the fact that they fart themselves. The base story is great. It's a very good story. It's a very well done story. It's if they had, and I've said this before, but if they had just made the farting just kind of happen and maybe other people noticed it, but the Slitheen kind of were just like, "Oh, whatever, we're just going about our day," then it would have worked better. It's kind of like the burping bin in Rose.
Yeah.
You know, if that wasn't there, that story probably wouldn't have really had much to nitpick on, you know? And same thing with here. They just they they kitted it up a little bit with that. But otherwise, the story really works really well. It's still a very good story to watch. I think the CGI is maybe the only thing that would let it down a bit.
You know, there's various conspiracy theories out there on the internet with regards to the people in power, the people that hold the power on Earth in governments around the world, are actually green aliens.
Really?
Mm.
So it's very apt, this story.
Well, in some ways, yeah, but it also kind of goes back to the V thing as well, in some ways. But that particular theory, there's a lot of Russell T Davies' work seems to echo conspiracy theories. I'd be interested to find out what websites he visits. Not all of the websites he visits. I'm sure I don't want to look at some of them, but not that. I don't wish to cast aspersions on Russell T Davies' internet browsing habits, by the way. I'm sure he's got better things to do with his time. Dalek came next before I dig myself into an even bigger hole. 8.63 million views. Joe Ahern directed, as we said, by Robert Sherman, who I don't think has written anything for the TV series since. And it was kind of inspired by one of his own Big Finish adventures, wasn't it?
Yes.
Was it Jubilee?
Yes.
Was it
Jubilee? Jubilee, yes. That's the one, yeah.
Okay. So we meet the Daleks. We don't meet the Toclofane, as we nearly did, but we meet the Daleks. There are a lot of very, very good moments in this.
Yeah, the whole story is a good moment. Yeah.
I think I'd probably, if I had to go for any, I'd probably opt for the killing the Dalek bit while it's in the cell. Because it has an inspiring effect on the Dalek, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it was again, it showed that post-traumatic stress doctor that we were supposed to be seeing in this season very well, you know, whereas we ordinarily wouldn't see the doctor jump quickly to go to the final solution to a problem. You know, he went immediately to, you know what, I've got it, why don't you burn? You know, and it was a very telling moment, very shocking to see the doctor be so different and very powerful. That whole speech that he gives in there when he's telling the Dalek, you know, how different they are, and the Dalek's trying to say how similar they are, and he's like, oh, and I got your little signal, you know, moment that, oh, that whole speech by Eccleston right there. And I've said this many times before as well, but Dalek is the story where Eccleston sold me that he was the doctor. Mm-hmm. And not to downplay anything he did beforehand, because he's a very, very good doctor. It was just somehow in that story, it cemented the fact that this was the guy I'd watched through 26 seasons of the previous show.
It's funny you should say that, because that didn't happen to me until the following week.
Really?
Yeah. Of all the stories, The Long Game, which is probably one of the least popular of the new series adventures, which is a bit of a shame, I think, because I think there's a lot in there that's really good. And like Series 3's Gridlock, it does seem to live in the same universe as the Doctor Who magazine cartoon strip. It does have that kind of feel about it. This is Russell T Davies' script, and 801 million viewers. There's a moment in it, and I'm going to say it's my favourite moment. I mean, it's not a perfect by any means, but it does seem a little unfair that it gets so derided. And there's this moment when the Doctor says, you know, this technology is wrong, and Rose says, trouble. And the Doctor says, oh, yes. That is the moment that I was sold on his Doctor.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, that's very Doctor-y, yeah.
Yeah, and up to that point, I hadn't been entirely sure about everything, but that was when it was sold to me. And you know, it's not, as we said, it's an interesting adventure, because it's also as well the key thing about this is that it's the arc in space to Bad Wolf and the Parting of the Ways,
yes,
Revenge of the Cybermen, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Yeah,
the same sets, which is a good idea. It's a shame they haven't really revisited that kind of idea.
Yeah, well, in a sense, it's good that they haven't overused it. But at the same time, it was always one of my favorite things about season 12 with Tom Baker for the Ark in Space and Revenge of the Cybermen. It was somehow cool to me that they reuse the sets rather than ever thinking about it as a money saving technique, you know. And then here, seeing it again, it was great to revisit it. Which actually, I guess, in a sense, maybe they do kind of revisit sets in the new series a lot, but oftentimes it's revisiting them and the time that we did actually last see them, you know. Whereas with season 12 and here with series one, they revisited them at two different points in their life when they were serving two separate functions, yeah. Which made it cooler. You know, it's much more interesting that way. So yeah, that was a very neat part for me. I really enjoyed that aspect.
How do you feel about the long game?
I do like the long game. I do think that somehow it's one of those stories that when you watch it afterward, you were kind of like, well, that was a good story. And I didn't sit there and think it was like fantastic. But somehow when you get to Bad Wolf and the Parting of the Ways and you see that they're connected and the Doctor was so close to actually having the Bad Wolf adventure at that moment, you know, he could have seen a little bit further, or he got to see the results of his actions. When you see that they're connected in that way, it makes the long game actually a much better story in my eyes. And I don't know if that's fair to say or if that's rude to say, but yeah, when I first saw it, I just thought, good story. After seeing Bad Wolf, The Parting of the Ways, I thought, okay, yeah, no, that's much better now. I like they're kind of a companion piece, and they really sell the whole thing together.
Well, you know, there's a tape recording of me somewhere, and I'd like to get hold of it, of me interviewing Rob Sherman.
Oh, wow, nice.
At one of Gareth's events at the Lasso Gallery back in the day. And he was a little bit upset that I didn't like Dalek when it first went out.
Really?
Yeah, that's because I said this to him. And the reason I said it to him was because it needed the Bad Wolf and the long game at the end of the series to contextualize it better. Because at that point, pretty much all we knew of the Time War was what happened, what we found out in Bad Wolf, and what we found out at the end of the end of the world. We didn't really know an awful lot about it besides those two nuggets, really.
Yeah.
And once you watch it with a foreknowledge of Bad Wolf and Parting of the Ways, it works a lot better in terms of the Doctor's reaction to the Dalek and things.
Yeah, it is a lot more interesting going through all of the Time War related stories now that we have so much more history for it. It definitely does sell a lot more of them easier, or give us a bit more of an understanding. I see where you're coming from with that, and I'm not sure I felt the same, because I do remember I probably watched that one to death in the week between that and the long game. But I definitely agree that actually getting to the end and seeing them all be connected further does enhance it. Period. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, that's just, as with any mystery, that's always going to happen. Sure, you know.
Sure. I watched long game recently, actually, and Dalek. Yeah, I watched them both last week. I think it was. Well, I definitely watched the long game last week. So that one's still fresh in my mind. No, I mean, that kind of brings us to the end of our run through these episodes until next week, and we'll pick it up with Father's Day. However, it's probably, you know, while we're talking about the Ninth Doctor, it's probably worth pointing out that along with their 900 variant covers, Titan Comics' miniseries of the Ninth Doctor by Cavan Scott is arriving on the 1st of April. So it's probably about 2 weeks' time. And I've had the chance of a preview of the first edition, and it's pretty good. As these comics go. So if you are feeling the nostalgic love for the Ninth Doctor, then we would recommend that you have a look at that when it's released. And we've also got an interview with Cavan Scott on Casterbus at the moment, which may also prove useful to your Ninth Doctor fix. Do people get a Ninth Doctor fix, do you think?
I think plenty of them do,
Your Ninth Doctor medicine. Even.
Hey.
Let us call it. So we don't have a recommendation this week, dear listener, other than checking out Series 1 of Doctor Who, because it's 10 years old. And it's sad, you know, for something that's 10 years old as well, I think it stands up very well, production value.
And, yes, absolutely.
Script-wise. Even those less popular adventures.
There's an amazing feel for me to the story. You know when... And you'll be able to relate to this, but you remember when Series 1 first aired, how new it felt.
Yeah.
And while we were excited that it was there, there was still this sense that it was this new show. And, you know, was it Doctor Who yet? You know, I don't know how else to describe that, but there was that feeling. now when I watch it, it's as classic to me as the classic series is.
Yeah.
And perhaps it's because over time I've just become more familiar with it through watching it over and over again, as I assume that's what made the classic series so classic. But there's something about it, and it's also the way it was shot. It's very visibly different from anything that's currently going out now, and certainly even something very visibly different from series two. If you watch one and two back to back, despite the fact that they had some of the same directors and certainly the same writers, they're very artistically different. So there is something very unique about series one, and it really does stand the test of time, as I think do many of the series in the new series. But series one still looks great. I know I mentioned the dodgy CGI on the Slitheen, but you know, whatever, it's dodgy CGI. We lived with rubber monsters. Who the hell cares? It's very good. It's very well put together, and the stories are still great. They still work. So yeah, very, very well worth the recommendation this week to be nostalgic and pick up on 10 years of history.
Absolutely. Okay. So we'll be back with part two next week, dear listener. We might even have James with us. Who knows? That'll throw a spanner in the works, won't it? Until next time, it's goodbye from us.